On Community Connections, it's time for this week's star interview.
Our star guest today is a producer, director, playwright, and a native New Yorker. Cindy Marion directed the New York world premiere of her own play, Broken Story, as well as the New York and LA productions of her play, You Are Perfect. Cindy's work doesn't shy away from difficult subjects, and by letting her works into our lives, we can learn quite a bit about ourselves. Well, I think we should learn a little bit about Cindy Marion. Cindy, welcome to Community Connections.
Thank you. Very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I think you may be our first playwright that we've had on the program, so congratulations.
Thank you. What an honor.
Have words always been important to you?
You know, they have, but I came to playwriting a bit later in my artistic career. I mainly started as a director. I trained officially as a director. I have an MFA in directing from Brooklyn College, but I always sort of knew that at some point there would be some stories, you know, words that I would want to put on paper, but I had to wait until I felt like I had enough experience or the right experience or something that was just, I felt compelled that I needed, you know, that I needed to be the one to tell that story or write that story. So it's only, I think, 2014, 2015 with You Are Perfect that I started down the path of writing. And I have to tell you, I love it. And I feel like I'm becoming more prolific as the years go on.
Did the lessons that you learned when you were directing, did that directly help you when you came to write plays? So you know that you're writing for the stage.
Absolutely. And honestly, the advice I give, you know, aspiring writers is study directing, study acting, because as a you know, playwright writing for the theater, there's so much more to what we need to create other than just words on a page. I mean, I can't tell you how many plays I would read, new plays as a director, you know, trying to find material to work on, where I would think to myself, how in the world are we going to stage this? I mean, this is a film, or, you know, this is not a piece of theater. It's relying a lot on flashing to here, a million different locations, rather than thinking about how, you know, the theatricality of the space and how we have to tell the story, you know, can we tell the story if we only had limited resources, or if we're relying only on the actors, you know, that sort of a bare bones type of situation. So, and I also, I think, partly started writing plays because I really wanted to create pieces that were really exciting for collaborators, directors, and actors to work on, that didn't have everything on the page, that left more room for creative interpretation, particularly with the world of the piece, you know, how it moves in space, what the visuals look like, that whole thing. So I find that often playwrights are sort of critiqued for writing too much. In the beginning, I was writing too little, in the sense that if I wasn't directing my own plays, the vision that I really had, you know, may not always come across if it wasn't me directing it. So I've sort of learned from that experience as well, that there's a balance to it. But my directing background has really served me as a writer, playwright, for sure.
When you have a play that you've written and you hand it over to a director and a crew to put on stage, do you like to retain some ownership of that, or are you actually happy to just let them go their own way, or do you pop into rehearsals? How does it work?
Good question. It's changed over time as well. In the beginning, I was directing my own plays. You Are Perfect, I directed the New York premiere, and then I had another director work on it who took it to Toronto, and I felt sort of unsatisfied by that. So then I came back in and directed another production in LA. And with Broken Story, I did the first production in New York. But since then, with my latest play it's a premiere in New York at 59 East 59 Thistles, I didn't want to direct it at all. I guess as time goes on, I feel like I'm moving back more into just the playwriting capacity. I definitely still have ideas and things like that, but I really find that it's more rewarding and more exciting to see what another director, you know, does with the material, because they're going to find things in it that I would never even thought about. And I think that just makes it even stronger and more exciting as an artist. So not to say I won't ever direct something I've written again, but I don't feel the need to in the same way that I did in the beginning. And maybe that also goes back to what I said earlier, that I've learned how to sort of communicate more on the page as a writer to make sure that anything that's important to me, you know, that another director would see that on the page. It wouldn't be just something in my head that I'm bringing out as a director.
A lot of the subjects that you deal with, and I'm thinking particularly in this case, You Are Perfect, you're looking at quite dark subjects. Charles Manson, these aren't happy-go-lucky plays, are they? But they are the sort of play that will teach you something.
Yes. In fact, I think the reason why, first of all, with You Are Perfect, it is definitely a very dark subject, but my entry point into it was redemption and forgiveness. As a writer and as an artist, I always seem to find myself identifying with the humans that have made the most mistakes, or those, you know, we're all, in my mind, you know, people aren't born that way, right? We're so quick to condemn people, but if we really look at their stories and try to understand how they ended up in these positions to begin with, and then we see if they, with You Are Perfect, I mean, we're talking about, you know, Susan Atkins of the Manson family. And of course, once the media had portrayed her as a certain type of villain, that was very hard for her to overcome that, even though she spent years in rehabilitation in prison, trying to, you know, redeem herself, asking for forgiveness, you know, converting or getting a very close relationship with Christianity and God and teaching other model inmates, so to speak. And I guess you have to sort of ask yourself that question, is when is enough enough, and when can we consider forgiving someone for the mistakes they've made? And I tend to find it, you know, not that I'm like justifying evil or whatever, but I tend to try to portray all of my characters, even the ones in the script that may be, you know, perceived as the villain, still from a humanistic perspective, trying to get under, try to understand what made them do the things they did, or why they might have done the things they've done. So those questions are really fascinating to me.
It's approaching a story that people think they know from a different angle, just to raise that question, just to raise that thought that things aren't always the one-dimensional way that people see them.
Exactly. And I mean, Susan Atkins is somebody's daughter, you know, she's somebody's wife. I mean, very easy to say she's this horrible person, but maybe we don't know the whole story. And even after seeing her perspective, her side of things, people may walk away and not be convinced. I mean, I can tell you, when we first opened in New York, some of the responses were just, how dare you even try to, you know, solicit any kind of understanding or empathy for these killer, you know, this. It's like people were not open to going there, and I couldn't change their perspective. But yet there were others that were incredibly moved by it, and felt like they were seeing things from a whole different angle. And as you say, yes, that is sort of the reason for telling the story, is to try to give people a different perspective, and maybe they'll see things a little differently.
Do you think sometimes art can try to be too safe, whereas sometimes art has to go out of a comfort zone?
Yes, and it's funny you should ask me that, because Susan Atkins obviously is deceased, and nobody, her husband, or nobody has ever come. I mean, I'm portraying her in a very sympathetic light, so why would they come after me and be like, why are you know, telling her story? But I tend to, obviously, like most writers, I tend to pull from, with the exception of that play, my more recent plays, I'm pulling from family members or inspired by people that I know, you know, close relationships with. And it's a very touchy subject, even though I feel that I'm presenting something in a very empathetic, positive light. It, you know, when you're dealing with dark issues, whatever they might be, I'm not necessarily writing about people that I know who've murdered, but it's people who have other, you know, human, I don't want to say faults, but we're human, that we all have faults. We're not perfect, right? So it's incredible how it can really, it can offend people. It can also make people very uncomfortable, and they don't know how to deal with it, so they either just don't address it, or so it's a fascinating thing. But on the other hand, I can't, as you say, be safe in everything I write. I have to be true to my voice. I have to be true to the stories, to the conflicts, to the challenges that I'm facing, and that's what fuels me as a storyteller. If I'm playing it safe, then I'm just entertaining people, and that's not why I'm an artist. I'm not an entertainer.
Let's look at one of your other plays, Thistles, based very much against the backdrop of a global calamity. There are many global calamities all around us. How much do you take from real life to inform your plays?
I take a lot, and that actually is probably my first play where I'm really writing about personal experience. And I mean, obviously, I change things for dramatic effect, and this, that, and so forth. But anybody who knows me personally, or the people that are inspiring the story, I mean, it's about a real conflict in my family over the selling of a property, over the selling of a house, and obviously, it caused great stress within my family, and it caused a lot of tension and this, that, and the other. And the play itself has actually led to some of those family members not even speaking to me anymore. But at the end of the day, you know what? The relationships were already fractured. It's not the play that fractured the relationships. It may give them a reason to not to, to or something to blame, but honestly, all of that was already there, and the play is just my expression of something that I was dealing with. And I think a lot of families, unfortunately, deal with. I didn't realize how common it actually was that houses sort of, properties can bring people together, but they can also absolutely tear them apart. And it's kind of sad, but also sort of amazing how common of a subject that sort of is. And I mean, across all cultures too, which is fascinating.
Were you able to use some of the work that you did writing that to help yourself move on? Maybe not have closure, but move on from where you were?
Absolutely. I mean, honestly, it was one of those pieces that I was compelled to write because I just had so much, frustration and just so many emotions over it that the process of writing it was quite cathartic. But the play itself, even though it did have a negative consequence, it also had a very positive one, because after having written it some of the family members having seen a Zoom reading of it, they did decide to sell the property. So in a way, it had a very positive effect on things, but some things are gained and some things are lost, but it definitely did have some reactions. And also some other positive things that I got out of it is I sort of found an extended family of audience members who could really relate with my point of view in the story, or and could relate to the story. And I felt like I wasn't alone, which was really healing for me. And I have been able to move on. So that's a plus.
You indicate there that your audience will come up to you and share their own stories.
Yes.
You must feel almost like a confessor, listening to other people and perhaps being able to support them, but actually maybe just a listening ear.
Yeah, I mean, I it was wonderful to me because, I mean, obviously most audience members don't always come up to the playwright. This was in particular after we had a talk back, so they knew who I was, and I think, they just felt compelled to share their stories because they had gone through something very similar, and they could feel the same exasperation as the central character in the play. So it was wonderful that they felt like they could share that, and it was also helpful to me to hear it because I felt like, wow, there are people who've had similar experiences, and I don't feel like I'm by myself. And I mean, that is what theater is supposed to do, right? Connect people and bring people together and work through things. So I felt really good about that.
Let's talk about the other great love of your life, the White Horse Theatre Company. You've been involved with that for quite a time now. Tell us about the impact that that has had on you and that you have had on it.
Absolutely. Well, I started working with Whitehorse pretty much right out of grad school. It was around 2002, and what I really wanted, as a director and as an artist, was sort of a home, a place where I could continually work on pieces that I really wanted to work on. Obviously, in graduate school, you can do that sort of thing, but once you get out in the real world as an artist, often you're chasing the job or whatever. And I really just wanted an artistic place where we could always work on the material, and take risks and that sort of thing. And I just answered an ad in Backstage Magazine, which is like a casting magazine in New York City at the time. And I found two actors that had just started this company. They're from the West Coast, from Los Angeles. And we bonded over a love of Sam Shepard, who's one of my absolute favorite writer and my inspiration as a writer. I think he's had the greatest influence on my own work. And we produced a I directed, they produced a production of True West. And then I think that, you know, they were actors and they were so excited about it. And the company may or may not have gone on. It was almost like they'd formed the company just to do that production. But then when I said to them, hey, you know, let's continue this. And one of them did leave and go on to pursue his own writing career. But the other actor, Rod Sweitzer, and I, we continued working together, and he's still acts in our shows. He's plays one of the roles on Thistles. He did it in New York, and we're going to be taking the production to North Hollywood next year, and he will be reprising that role. So it's been a very long, very rewarding relationship, and I serve as the producing artistic director, and we have a core group of designers that we work with repeatedly on every production, and it's a fabulous sort of family, and we get to do the work that we really enjoy doing. And obviously, we've grown over the years and have a lot of donors and supporters who allow us to continue to do this work without you know worrying about ticket sales, although they're a part of it. It's really a an operation for artists to be able to express themselves honestly and truthfully.
Is a company like the White Horse Theatre Company safe in America at the moment?
We are safe only because we have never relied on government funding. Believe it or not, we're a grassroots organization, and we rely on a lot of small donors. We have some larger ones, but because we rely on a lot of small donations, we're not really severely impacted if one person doesn't give or this, that, and the other. And we have applied for grants in the past, and we have gotten some, but honestly, it's so much work in the United States to do that. We don't have time. Time is money, you know, and most of us have other jobs to support ourselves so that we can be artists and just make the work. So we find that we're more successful on just building a sponsor base of people who like the work we do and want to support us. And we've been very fortunate to be able to grow that over the years. And so we do feel pretty safe in that regard because we're not sort of facing the same thing that a lot of companies are facing, where they're losing their funding. Or not to say that it's still not difficult, obviously, but we're safer than most, I would say.
We certainly wish you the very best. Will
Thank you.
you be coming over to the UK at any point and putting your productions on over here?
You know, it's interesting you asked that question. I really would love, I have my one play that is published, Broken Story, the Hollywood murder mystery inspired by the murder of Robert Durst, murder of his best friend, Susan Berman, is published by a UK publisher based outside of London. They also have offices in South Africa. It's called Off the Wall Plays. And it's always been my dream that, you know, a theater company in England and London and the UK would produce Broken Story. I've always felt like my work is very appreciated by European artists. There's something very, first of all, I love the fact that in Europe and in London, I mean, I studied abroad in London, and I was very inspired by the culture of how, you know, how the support for art's sake, and not, you know, and as part of a culture, and not just about Broadway and entertainment and that sort of thing. So I would love it if somebody would, you know, somebody over there would pick up my play. As far as my bringing it myself, that I don't know. White Horse is, you know, we're open to ideas. We've been to LA and Toronto, so I won't say never, but it's not something that's planned at the moment.
Well, if anyone is interested in finding out more information about you and your plays, Cindy, what's the easiest way they can do that?
Best way is just to visit my website, which is www.cindyamarion.com.
And Cindy is spelt Cyndy, just to
Thank you.
clarify that for people over here in the UK. And White Horse Theatre Company, your website address for that one?
That would be www.whitehorsetheater, spelled the American way, ER.com.
Touche, touche. Cindy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on the programme. What are you working on at the moment?
Actually have a brand new script. It's a two-hander about female attraction versus female connection, and also dealing with addiction. It's called The Edge. I'd say it's sort of my I would say it's sort of my version of Mamet, but with women. You know, David Mamet's place kind of a little bit raunchy too, and it's having its first ever reading actually on Saturday in Woodstock, New York. We've just partnered with a small new event and art space up here called Queen of Rogues. So I'm very excited to hear that piece because it'll be the first time I'm getting a chance to have it read aloud by great actors and have a director too.
We wish you the very, very best with that, Cindy. Cindy A. Marion, thank you so much for joining us on Community Connections. Come back on again. It's been an absolute
Love to.
pleasure.
Love to. Thank you so much, Andrew. I really enjoyed the discussion.
This is Community Connections, connecting Sherborne with the world. And the world with Sherborne.
Well, once again, our programme is nearly at an end. Doesn't that hour go so quickly? My thanks to our guests today, to Cindy Marion, Ella Mae Dixon and Dee Swinton. I'll be back with the programme at the same time next week. Hope you can join me then. In the meantime, though, from me, Andrew Reid, bye-bye.
On Monday mornings at 9 and Sunday afternoons at 3, this is Community Connections.